From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. What impacts can we expect from the new policy of the Baltimore City State's attorney not to prosecute possession of marijuana? Former police detective Debbie Ramsey, now part of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, urges prosecutors and police not to square off in opposition, but together to listen to how citizens want marijuana laws enforced. Sonia Kumar, staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland, says evidence to back up the new policy was clear 6 years ago.
We found that every single county had race disparities at least twice the rate of arrests for Black Maryland residents as opposed to white residents. In the face of well-documented evidence that marijuana use is pretty much comparable across race.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office will no longer prosecute individuals for possession of marijuana. State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby made the announcement last week, calling it a move to prioritize justice over convictions. Here's part of what she told WIPR's Midday on Friday.
There's absolutely no public safety value. It disproportionately impacts communities of color, erodes public trust that we need in order to get bad guys off the street, and is costly and counterproductive to the limited use of resources that we currently have.
Her office also moved to vacate convictions in nearly 5,000 cases of marijuana possession dating back to 2011. Prosecutions for intent to distribute or distribution of marijuana will continue. There are varied reactions to the new policy. Baltimore City's interim police commissioner, Gary Tuggle, indicated that marijuana arrests are not a priority for police, but arrests for marijuana possession will continue. Mayor Catherine Pugh said she is in favor of ending the, quote, unnecessary criminalization of those who possess marijuana merely for personal use, end quote. State Senate President Mike Miller said, quote, Ms. Mosby is wrong, close quote, in this decision. With us to discuss how this move will impact Baltimore City residents is Sonia Kumar, staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
What do you believe prompted this move?
You know, I really could not answer that question. I think that there's been a lot of increasing recognition across the country that not only are we sort of continuing to prosecute low-level cases of marijuana possession, but also just growing recognition of the real costs of that approach to possession of small amounts of drugs. And so I don't think it's entirely unexpected that in Baltimore, you know, public officials are starting to really examine what our practices are here.
How have Marylanders been affected by prosecution for marijuana possession?
Well, I think the most significant thing from our perspective has been the extraordinary race disparities in enforcement of marijuana laws in Maryland. And so about 5 years ago, the ACLU of Maryland did an analysis of marijuana possession arrests for every county in the state. And we found that every single county had race disparities of at least, you know, on average, twice the rate of arrests for Black Maryland residents as opposed to white residents, in the face of well-documented evidence that marijuana use is pretty much comparable across race. And so what that really showed was what folks have long been saying, which is that, you know, when it comes to enforcement, people of color, and particularly Black residents of Maryland, were really significantly disproportionately arrested and punished for marijuana possession.
Interim Police Commissioner Gary Tuggle, as I said, promised that the police will continue to arrest individuals for possession of marijuana unless the state law making it illegal is changed. Maryland's courts have ruled that the smell of marijuana can constitute probable cause for a search. How will this policy change by the state's attorney's office work with these impediments in place?
Well, I think, you know, one important thing is that it's, you know, important to know what the interim police chief's position is, but we have a range of city officials who are responsible for the practices of our city, including our police department. And so I think the, you know, a really important point in all of this is that every arrest has a cost. It's not just in terms of the hours of police time or government resources, but also in terms of the interaction between that person and his or her community and how they understand police priorities and city priorities. And in that way, the relationship that that State's Attorney Mosby referenced and between, you know, racially disparate enforcement of our marijuana laws and public trust in police is really salient here. And so I think it's, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us to really be considering not just the sort of very, you know, tangible law enforcement costs, but the very significant erosions of public trust when what people see is that, you know, 95% or more of the people arrested for marijuana possession in our city are Black, in a city that is 65% Black, and how that impacts public trust in police and trust that city officials are actually really considering how the practices and policies of the police are affecting community residents.
Well, let me pick up on your point with another comment that State's Attorney Mosby made to Midday on Friday.
The amount of manpower, I just don't believe that I want to utilize my manpower to be able to prosecute. You have to be arrested. You're fingerprinted. You're booked. You're jailed depending upon your record. You have to appear in court. You know, you have charges that must be reviewed by my office. If there's body-worn camera footage, then that has to be reviewed. There, the controlled dangerous substance analysis. You have to prove that this is an illegal substance.
It sounds as if the biggest problem is the arrest, at least as big as the prosecution. Will changing the prosecution strategy make much difference?
That's a great question. I think it certainly adds more reason to reconsider the sort of current strategy in terms of the arrest. I think it is absolutely true that the, you know, the prosecution itself is significant, right? Because then you have to go to a trial, you have to have a lawyer. I mean, there's a lot that goes on there, but the harm begins with the arrest, and so I think it's a significant step forward, and really, you know, maybe one way to think about it is that it's you know, it can be seen more as a call to action for the both for the police department and other city officials.
That's Sonia Kumar, staff attorney with the ACLU of Maryland, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about an announcement by the Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby last week that her office will no longer prosecute individuals for possession of marijuana. Do you see this move toward further decriminalization as paving the way for legalization of cannabis for recreational use?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, and I think that that's part of just a broader trend growing from sort of recognition of the tremendous costs of the drug war generally and the law enforcement based approach to substance use rather than a public health approach. So I think that's probably fair to say, yes.
If you had a chance to talk to Michael Harrison, the likely new police commissioner of Baltimore City, what would you tell him?
I think I would tell him that he has an incredibly significant opportunity to rewrite the script about the relationships between the residents of Baltimore City and the Baltimore Police Department officers who are responsible for ensuring our safety. My understanding is actually that in New Orleans, where he's coming from, possession of marijuana was decriminalized by a city ordinance there, and officers under his command were instructed not to make arrests in those cases. I would urge him to adopt the same approach here.
Thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you.
Sonia Kumar is staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland. Quick break here on The Record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we're back, more reaction to the end of marijuana possession prosecution in Baltimore City. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Baltimore will no longer prosecute cases of marijuana possession, no matter the amount, no matter a person's criminal record. State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby spoke to Tom Hall on WYPR's Midday on Friday.
We did what we did is because when we think about the collateral sort of consequences that are a result of convictions, you know, people are impacted on so many different levels, not just social, economic, and political, but when they go to apply for adoptions and housing and immigration and employment and professional licensure and property rights and mobility and education, it has so many disabilities that are a direct result from being involved in the criminal justice system. And recognizing that it's had a disparate sort of impact on communities of color, we're asking the court to vacate these convictions.
Debbie Ramsey is a former Baltimore police detective and a member of Law Enforcement Action Partnership, a nonprofit that works to reform drug policies. In her 12 years in the BPD, Ramsey rose from community police officer to patrol officer to a detective within the Criminal Investigation Division Drug Enforcement Section. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Baltimore police say they made 363 arrests for possession of marijuana in 2018, an average of one a day. When you were on the force, how frequently were you making arrests for marijuana possession?
Well, my experience was a little bit different, and perhaps it had a lot to do with being a detective in the Criminal Investigation Division mm-hmm. as opposed to a uniformed police officer. And the distinction is that the level of concentration with who we would be investigating was on a higher level, mainly the distributors, not so much the users, which in my estimation has always been a health issue. And I had voiced my opinion about that when I was a detective. So for me, the number of arrests, we were instructed back in the 80s, do not bring in any marijuana cases. For me, that set the tone of a sign of things to come. And where we are here today, it is the natural order of things to come. And I think the community at large have spoken out about this. And I would like to know whether or not if State Attorney Mosby and the police commissioner, if they have earnestly asked the community how they feel about and what it is that they want. You have a community that has been targeted for all types of things, all types of reasons. Anytime we can have an opening for discussion and opportunity for the police department and the community to have a collaboration, an earnest conversation, an authentic conversation, I think this is an opportunity for community and the police to come together as opposed to everyone is squaring off for whatever reason. It could be political. It could be I want to keep my job. It doesn't matter. I would like to hear what the community has to say.
And I can't say that I've seen an indication of that. Interim Police Commissioner Gary Tuggle told The Sun that his force does not focus its patrols on arresting people for marijuana possession. And State's Attorney Mosby told Midday that her decision not to prosecute was not unilateral. Here's part of what she said.
And I sat down with the police commissioner prior to the announcement of my policy. I explained to him a couple of weeks ago my position and my rationale. We have a great working relationship. We always have. We will continue to have a great working relationship. He disagreed and stated that he felt that it was driving violent crime. And when I explained to him that's not the case, we disagreed. I offered to provide training to the officers with reference to ensuring that in their statements of probable cause, when they do proceed upon individuals for distribution, they knew exactly what we were looking for beyond mere possession. So this was not necessarily a unilateral decision, but I'm going the same way he's exercising his discretion is and wants to use his manpower towards, you know, the prosecution of marijuana. I'm not.
Tuggle and others have said that in the fight against violent crime, arresting for marijuana possession is a tool. So in your view, is discouraging these arrests handicapping officers' abilities?
Well, let's look at the facts. The fact of the matter is that we know for certain that the police department is understaffed. We also know for certain that the recruitment that comes from the community is less than favorable. So if we look at it scientifically, A plus B equals C, then we come to the conclusion that the community may have something to say about how laws are going to be enacted and how it's going to affect them in their day-to-day life. I know that it's a probable cause situation with the police that, for starters, Maryland has decriminalized marijuana for the last 2 years. That's a fact. Anything less than 10 grams, that is considered a civil matter. But yet you still need to go before a judge or to pay a fine. So you're still caught up in the criminal justice system. And a lot of people may not fully understand that when you have a civil matter and you're going before the judge, that could be easily interpreted as a criminal, something will be on your record. So since it's a civil matter and it's less than 10 grams, it's just personal possession, I would like to know if a police officer can detect from the smell that a person has less than 10 grams. Can you smell less than 10 grams? That's my question. So, I mean, I think we have to look at everything across the board, take into consideration and where we are as a society. We live in a free society. There are certain things that people want to do regardless. I'm way over 21, never smoked a cigarette in my life, not crazy about alcohol, but I can acquire those things if I want to. If marijuana does become legal, it doesn't represent that there's going to be an onslaught of people running to it, people like myself. So, but when you live in a free society, you have access to a lot of things you want to intake and things that people want to take into themselves. They're going to find a way to get there, whether it's legal or not. And it wasn't that long ago when the Maryland State Lottery in the 70s, I remember that. And I remember number runners. There are a lot of people who have criminal records because of running numbers. When the state of Maryland decided to do lottery, they hired the number one number runner in Baltimore to be their consultant. So I think we owe it to ourselves to look at history, and there's a sign of things to come and where we're going as a society. And I think the police department and the state's attorney's department, everyone needs to be on board and working together. This should be a collaboration between the police, state's attorney, and the community.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with retired Baltimore Police Detective Debbie Ramsey, who today is a member of Law Enforcement Action Partnership, which advocates for the end of the prohibition on drugs and for treatment of drug abuse as a health issue rather than a law enforcement issue. I want to get back to your point about the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana under 10 grams. For Maryland residents, it seems like there's bound to be confusion now. Across the state, mm-hmm. under 10 grams can result in a fine but not prosecution. In Baltimore, possessing more than 10 grams, you also won't face prosecution. But at the federal level, possession of any amount is still a crime.
Yeah, that's a very good example of how you have different entities with wonderful intentions of not speaking clearly with one another and coming to a consensus in order for the community to not only appreciate will understand what's going on. So all of this makes it very cloudy. I'm a citizen. I'm a Boston City resident. And it's still cloudy to me. And I've been in the criminal justice system on both sides. As a private investigator that worked with a lot of defense attorneys, and as a police officer, an officer of the state. So in any organization, when you have fragmentation and maybe not a coming of the meeting of the minds of any particular policy, there's going to be confusion, there's going to be uncertainty, and when you get right down to it, there's going to be a lack of trust in the system. And our system is so, it's just with heaviness of citizens like myself not fully understanding what is happening, our elected officials, what are they doing? What does this mean to us, as opposed to just making a blanket statement, yes, we're going to do it, and on the other side, no, we're not. And the community is always caught in the middle. So people are making decisions for a community that you have not brought into the fray to have a authentic conversation. And that's what's lacking. And probably why we're having this conversation today, because this is going to impact a lot of people. It's going to impact a community. And even the police officers themselves may be somewhat confused. Can you imagine that? You have the authority to make arrests, and you have to discern, is this a civil matter or is this a criminal matter? Is this an arrestable offense or is this a citation? So I would not be surprised if the police officers may be confused as well, and which is so important why we need leadership with the Baltimore Police Department, where there's some clarity and some clearness. And until we get that, there's going to be confusion. And it gives the impression to me that there are some entities that have already squared off. And there's no wiggle room. It's going to be either this or that. I think the community deserves more. I think our voices need to be heard. And I think we need to have some input in all these decisions that people are making on behalf, that lives are going to be impacted negatively or positively.
Do you think the new prosecution policy in the city will result in some officers trying to make cases of distribution or intent to distribute, since they know that a possession charge wouldn't be prosecuted?
Well, yeah, somewhat. Just speaking from experience, and I'm thinking back on my rookie days, even though we have graduated from the academy and we received all this wonderful training, and we did our report writing, and we did our psychological testing, and and we went through our drug enforcement manuals and the SOPs and the general orders and all that. When you hit the street, everything is not very clear to you, and mainly you want to stay alive, and you don't want to hurt anyone unnecessarily, and you do not want to get yourself hurt unnecessarily. So I discovered there's something that police officers know everything they're supposed to know. That is not true. To a certain extent, it is on-the-job training. And if you think about it, it has to be on-the-job training. They are equipped as best they can with all the tools that can afford them to be very, very successful and to be the public servants that they have sworn to be. Nonetheless, we are human beings. There's no way you can retain all the information, especially if the information is changing. Imagine you have a recruit that graduated, let's say, 6 months ago, before the announcement's made whether or not they're going to prosecute. Now you have the same officer on the street. Well, maybe they did not get the new memo, you know. Maybe they're still operating under the old general order, or has it been rescinded or amended? And so it goes back to confusion. It goes back to a lack of clarity. And that's not good when you have people in positions that can impact your freedom of movement.
I really appreciate you talking to me about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Debbie Ramsey is a retired detective with the Baltimore Police Department. She served 12 years on the force and is now a member of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, LEAP, which advocates for the end of the prohibition on drugs. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.